Off the Ball.
GAA.
I always feel like the best players were able to grab a game by the scruff of the neck when an opportunity kind of presented itself. Great players and great teams were able to kind of seize that moment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
All right, very welcome along to this week's episode of Final One Standing. There's a full slate of Premier League games for us to get stuck into. We'll get Lee Phelps from William Hill online in a few minutes. In the meantime, Eve, Shane and David are here. People, you're all very welcome. What's going on?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank
you. I think, Eve, since the last time you've been here, there's a new manager, it's for us.
There has.
A lot of excitement.
A lot of excitement. Listen, you could say that, you know, so many times over the past few seasons. There's been so much chopping and changing. I'm just glad it's happened before we can get relegated.
And sometimes, you know, be careful what you wish for. They've got Igor Tudor.
Igor Tudor. I knew very little about him, apart from the fact that he managed a bit in Italy. But he's kept a lot of teams up. He's a kind of a professional interim manager.
Yeah.
And he's very successful at it. So I'm... you know, not just totally despairing.
And that's what this is, a relegation safety appointment.
Yes, which is not really what I'd anticipated going into this season. I don't think any Spurs fan was, despite the 17th place finish last season. Things have kind of gone off the rails very quickly.
Yeah.
Strict disciplinarian, apparently.
Yeah.
Tudor doesn't care.
Someone to come in and break their spirit.
Exactly what you need.
He's kind of saved, like, he saved Udinese twice. He kind of got Juventus' season back on track when they looked like they weren't going to qualify for the Champions League, and they kind of got them into the Champions League. He got Marseille into Europe as well when they looked like they were kind of hitting the rails. So, like, I don't know. He's a short-term appointment, which I think is a good thing for Spurs in the now.
You rarely see teams go for the manager with no Premier League experience for the rescue job. Usually it's the Big Sam sort of, Sean Dyche sort of hire.
So you think he could be gone by the end of March?
Well, it's going very badly, very quickly.
I will say, when Dyche got the sack the day after Frank, I had a moment where I thought that would be the next appointment. That would be the interim.
Wow.
Just because the season has been crazy already. But I'm not...
The dark recesses of Eve's mind come to the fore.
It's not good up here. It's this season's driving me crazy. Now, I think actually it made sense to go for a non-Premier League manager. Just because I feel like if Tottenham had hired a Big Sam or even brought back someone like a 78-year-old Harry Redknapp, you're nearly admitting that you're in this really, really dark, terrible space.
Yeah. Sometimes it's best to understand what the reality of your situation is before you can fix it. Lee Phelps is with us. Lee, good morning to you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Fascinating listening to that conversation about... I'm still shaking my head that they've appointed Igor Tudor. I just can't believe it. Like, every time I think about it, I think, what? Where did that come from? I mean, I get your point about the interim specialist, but... He's not always been successful, by the way. And I just think, what? In this day and age of players who... clearly they have influence. They've always had influence, of course. But what are those Spurs players thinking when this guy comes in? Like, they're not... I'm not as confident as you guys are about, you know, him being able to just suddenly, you know, bounce into the Premier League with no Premier League experience. Multiple managers have frequently told us how it's a different challenge to any other league in the world, mainly Europe, I guess. But yeah, fascinating. But the North London derby is just set up so well, isn't it? Brilliant.
And I was going to say, a nice handy start from a little off-Broadway game. We have it live on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, do indeed. Yeah, but maybe sometimes you're better off. Like Michael Carrick had City and Arsenal in his first couple of games. He got a big win in a massive game. And also, like, Keith Tracy, who's a resident Arsenal fan, obviously, on the show this morning, interestingly said he would be more fearful of Spurs this weekend if they had hired a Harry Redknapp. Someone who just comes in, lifts the spirit, lets them play whatever way they're going to play and gets the win. But this is more of an unknown entity with Igor
Tudor. Do you think Richarlison is going to be a disciplinarian manager's type of guy?
No, I think he's definitely the type of player that would buy into someone who kind of gets him on side. I think Tudor is going to probably fire a rocket into that dressing room, and I think a lot of those players probably need it. Maybe Thomas Frank was a bit maybe too kind of arm around the shoulder, and these players need a bit of, I don't know, aggression, and that's what Igor Tudor and his coaching staff seem like they're going to bring. So, like, I think this is a great opportunity for Spurs, because you've got a free hit against Arsenal. All you have to do is go out and just kind of give a good account to yourselves. You know, like, Arsenal are kind of look a bit they're teetering again. You know, the result against Wolves during the week, they look a bit brittle. So this is a great opportunity for Tudor, Spurs, and you're welcome them to your stadium. So like you can get really, you can get after them, I think.
Unfortunately, that's not any kind of, that for Spurs, that doesn't mean much. Their home record still isn't great this season. But what it is that they're playing Arsenal at the exact right time you want to be playing Arsenal, which is they're down on their luck,
yeah.
A bit downtrodden.
Mm.
So you guys have an epic boost on Arsenal to win the league.
Yeah, out to 4-6 from it was 4-7. Which I mean,
why?
It's in City. It's in both teams' hands, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's in City's hands and it's in Arsenal's hands. Obviously, it's a big ask to go and win, you know, all the remaining games now for either side. And I think we'll obviously see, you know, peaks and troughs of the, you know, still. I think once the worrying thing for Arsenal, I guess, will be if Manchester City overtake them at any point, that's when you wonder how it affects Arsenal. They're not doing bad, are they? I mean, everyone's saying the wheels have fallen off and it was like a, you know, catastrophic that they drew 2-2 with Wolves. They are still in front. You know, they are still the best team in the country over the course of the season, you would say. So, we saw a fair bit of interest in Man City after the Wolves 2-2 draw with Arsenal. We saw interest in City and cut them into 6-4. There've been a range of prices though, Man City this season. So have they got the consistency? From a neutral point of view, it would be brilliant to see them win against Newcastle and put that pressure onto the North London derby. Yeah, that's like purely as a neutral. Yeah, I want the best team to win the Premier League, obviously, and I want to see a brilliant title chase and a great run in. But that would be just good for going into that Sunday. North London derby would be brilliant with even more pressure heaped on.
Are we sleeping a bit on Man City at the minute? The fact that they had a bad year last year and that there's been fairly significant turnover in players, but that at the same time, they still have Haaland, Rodri, Silva, and several others who are around the squad who have experience of reeling off 8-10 games in a row at this time of the year. And they still have, obviously, yeah, Guardiola, who's done it 4 out of 5, the last 5 seasons.
Yeah, I think I went through this a few weeks ago. I was making a case for Manchester City around December time, I think, you know, over Christmas, and I went through those lists. And there's 4 or 5 examples, aren't there, of where they've gone on those runs at this time of year as well. So, but there's been an inconsistency to them this season that doesn't give me that kind of feeling that they can go and do that. I mean, you at this stage of the season, you start to look at the the fixtures, don't you? You start to look at games and think, did they go to Leeds and win? Yeah, maybe. Did they go to, you know, can they win every game? What happens in that game with Arsenal, for instance? We've obviously got the League Cup final as a prelude to it as well. So you've got that. Then Man City have got to go to Chelsea. You know, so there's plenty of games in there that are sticky. Last game of the season is against Aston Villa at home. I mean, by no means a given, depending on where Aston Villa are in their season for the last game. So there's so many things that can happen. I don't see them winning all of them, obviously. You know, who knows? I mean, I've said for a while that City would win the title. I thought Arsenal, the problem for me is that I'm not very good at trusting a team or a player or in whatever sport until they've done it. I like to see that they've done it. And this is only from a kind of betting point of view. I don't like to kind of, unless it's a really good price, I wouldn't want to be backing Arsenal at odds on.
No.
When I haven't seen them do it before. Don't need to do that. If I'm having a bet on that, I'd rather go City because I've seen them do it before. Like you just said, I know they've got that in their capabilities. So I'd rather back them at odds against, maybe not 6-4 because they've been a bigger price than that, but I'd rather back them with the experience rather than a team who've never done it. And they're not exactly blowing everyone away at the moment, Arsenal either, are they? So great running now. Brilliant.
As a matter of interest, you know what the biggest price City were when you were talking maybe back in December with the...
And I think that they drifted out to like 3s and 4s, I think. You know, they weren't maybe a little bit bigger than that, but you know, there's not been a huge price, yeah, but very backable though.
Oh yeah, you'd feel pretty good if you had backed them at that price. Just on the Spurs side, in terms of relegation, they're not going to get relegated, are they? Are they?
Well, no, probably not. You'd think they'd have enough about them, but like the form's poor, isn't it? They were as short as 9-2. They're now 11-2. Now, I checked back and the records aren't quite as good back in 2008 as they are now in terms of, you know, the internet. But with the help of ChatGPT and a few other things, I managed to kind of look back on that 2008 start to the season when Juan de Ramos had a disaster and was sacked by October. Hadn't won a game by then. They were rock bottom. And I think the shortest price they were around there that I could find was around 5-1. So that 9-2 was the shortest price they'd been at least since 2008 for relegation. Obviously, Harry came in and rescued them that time. And that's why maybe I thought he might come in again or someone of his ilk. But look, they need to... With relegation, I look at points per game. I know it's an obvious thing to say, but at the halfway stage, I always look at how many points have teams got per game. If we say that safety is mid-30s, and sometimes it's much lower than that, last season obviously it was, then West Ham are still under that ratio. They're still averaging less than a point a game, hence why they're 4-5 to go down. They're still odds on to go down. Let's say Burnley and Wolves, unfortunately for them, have gone. Well, you've got Forest, Tottenham, Leeds, they're all averaging over a point a game. So as long as that's the same, obviously, that's how it's going to finish. And you just got to look at how many teams can then amass the kind of points. Leeds getting a draw at Chelsea, unbelievably. There's your point. You know, every time they get a win, it kind of affords you a loss somewhere because it kind of keeps that going. I don't know where, and a lot of Tottenham fans are saying this to me, where do their points come from exactly? So where do Tottenham, like, they, Tottenham fans, I know that they're down in the dumps, but like they're saying, where do we win games? Like, and it's a fair point, you know, that you think they should pick up points, but they've been pretty abject. So if Igor Tudor comes in and absolutely like goes into the dress, by the way, I don't think those players are like, oh, wow, here's Igor Tudor like laying the law down. They'll be like, so
you'll be gone in 8 weeks, buddy. I'll still be here on my flat contract.
It might be that attitude. I'm not saying it is, but like we don't know that he's going to go in there. Why would he going in there laying the law down make any difference to them? But yeah, so they're away at Fulham, home to Crystal Palace. Yeah, you can maybe see points, but they're terrible at home, so you could maybe see points in those games. Away at Liverpool, nah. Home to Nottingham Forest, maybe. Away at Sunderland. Nope. So you start to go down, you're thinking, how many points can Tottenham actually get between now and the 24th of May? They're away at Chelsea. They've got Leeds. They're away at Villa. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, Leeds
are 10-1, by the way, which I think is a big price still. Mm. I know they're a good side. I'm not saying they're going down, but 10-1 seems big.
Before Palace beat Brighton, I had them backed from a few weeks back at 9-1. They're at 16 now, so I thought it was reasonable. One of these teams, I think West Ham are going to squeak it. I think they're going to be okay. I think they're playing
okay, right?
They're playing well. They're playing good football. So there is definitely somebody there is going to get caught in that death spiral.
That Spurs Forest game on the 22nd of March, huge. Yeah. And obviously, if Spurs, as you say, Lee, the home form for Spurs wouldn't fill you with any confidence. So you look at the home games for Spurs and you almost think, well, there's not many points to pick up there. So that Spurs Forest game, particularly on the 22nd of March, jumps out to me. It's just mad, the as I said on the show this morning, like the thought of £1 billion stadium next year in the Championship charting coming to town. Like, it's just... Imagine.
A mile of cheese.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it? It's hard to imagine. What they are on? They're on 29 points. If we say 36 is safety, and that's, maybe 38 is safety, you know, somewhere around there. Well, if it's 36, they still need another 7 points, don't they, to get to that? If it's 38, they need, you know, another 9 points from here on in. So, look, it's, you know, 12 games left. They need, you know, a couple of wins, a few draws. It should be doable, shouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so that game kicks off at 4:30. Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle on commentary duty for us live on Off the Ball on Sunday on News Talk. You can also get it on the Go Loud app as well. We actually haven't talked about the odds for the game. Arsenal are favourites, 7-4 on. Spurs are 24-5 to win a home game. Is that not a massive price? Mm-hmm. Nearly 5-1 to win a home game, to win a derby?
Yeah.
That must be one of the biggest
Tottenham, though, isn't it? I've watched a lot of them, and they don't seem to be able to string 90 minutes together. And how is the manager going to make them string 90 minutes together? I might look an absolute idiot late on Sunday night, and it's happened before. But I just don't see it. I just don't see how he's going to have that much of an impact. What I do think is, I think, and I hope it'll be Blood and Thunder. I think he'll hopefully he'll have them at it and they'll understand the importance. And if Man City have one, Arsenal will know the importance. I can see cards. I can see it being feisty. You know, Tottenham's discipline has been terrible this season. More yellow cards than any other team in the division. So I do think overs on the cards is a way to play this. And there should be goals as well because Tottenham can't defend. Yeah. And Arsenal surely will go for it. You know, remember the kind of Arteta, you know, was it against Man United where he suddenly starts going like, getting, you know, go on, puts all of his players on. And starts, I think that's going to be the attitude here. They have to react, don't they, Arsenal? So I'm going to be looking at a bet builder, I think. Overs on the cards, overs on the goals. It's going to be, I hope it's as good as it is in my head.
So that would be a cracker if that is the case. As you already mentioned, Manchester City play Newcastle 8 o'clock on Saturday night. Man City are 9-4 on. Newcastle are 4-1 to win that game. Newcastle's curious form this season. Excellent midweek in a tricky away game in Europe. Hammered by Liverpool a couple of weeks ago. It's a bit of a roller coaster. They clearly don't have the squad size to deal with the two competitions. So is this a routine Manchester City victory?
I mean, Eddie Howe has a horrendous record against Pep, doesn't he? The years. And obviously that's, well, it was Karabag Azerbaijan, isn't it? That's a long, long trip to come home. And I know it wasn't easy enough. You watched the defending from Karabag.
Yeah.
It was horrendous. A lot of those goals were just handed to them. But, I think I said it about the last City Newcastle game. I was wrong, but this is a City win all over it. They'll have seen what happened at Molineux during the week and they'll be licking their lips and thinking, this Arsenal team are there for the taking. Not that they wouldn't have been thinking that anyway, but that whole, this is still in their hands that Lee has mentioned, like, City will be talking about that. They'll be saying, look, if we win every single game, it's not going to happen, but they will be talking about that in the dressing room, saying, we can control this. We have it in our own destiny. So I just think there's something about Eddie Howe coming up against Pep Guardiola and it's psychological barrier that he can't get past.
Yeah, like City have a really strong record against Newcastle at home. And Newcastle are winless in the last 21 Premier League away head-to-heads with Man City. So they've a terrible record.
Tiny sample size there.
Yeah. But
that's mad.
Like, I think when Newcastle is, like, they obviously, like you said there, their squad size isn't big enough and it's not good. And Eddie Howe hasn't rotated the squad well enough to kind of keep players fresh and kind of compete on both fronts. But I think Man City would be looking at having a full week off and be looking at this game and targeting it from last week, saying, like, we're going to go out and make a statement and put the pressure back on Arsenal, especially after the result during the week.
Can they do that, though? Because their form has not been great.
Yeah, but I don't think they need to win. Like, remember they used to go and win 14 games in a row and 15 games in a row? I don't think they need to do that. I think maybe 6 or 8 games might be enough. Like, it's going to be a really low points tally that wins the league this season. I think if City are just thereabouts, even 2, 3, 4 points when we get into March, April, like, as Lee was mentioning earlier, when Arsenal still haven't done it, like, you still don't trust them, and I still don't trust them to kind of win this league. So,
and what City have going for them as well is that they have been in all four competitions at this stage of the season many times before. Arsenal suddenly are playing more games at this stage late in the season than they have in previous years. Yeah. Their squad is getting tired. You can see that, where City probably have resilience more than they do.
The one counter to that is, of course, that they did have that aborted pre-season because of the Club World Cup, and we've never had the influence of a Club World Cup on a team at this stage of the season yet, so we don't quite know. Now, obviously, they went out slightly earlier. Chelsea went all the way to the end, an extra maybe week or 10 days. Mm. And they've obviously bought a million players. So maybe that somewhat counteracts that. But I do think that we still haven't quite worked out what the influence of that's going to be on these teams yet. So that's an unknown as it stands.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? I think that all the things you've said about Man City are true. I think the 4-9 to win this game, which is short, isn't it? You know, I know the record against Newcastle is brilliant. 4-1 Newcastle, 19-5 the draw. But and there'll be an epic boost on this one as well, as there are for the other the kind of live TV games. And I think I know Tonali played really well for Newcastle, you know, but without Bruno Guimarães in these sort of games, I think they lack. Brilliant in midweek in Europe, of course. You know, they filled their carabag with goals and went home, didn't they, Newcastle? But that trip has to have an impact. Everything that you've said has to have an impact, I think. And Newcastle fans, when they got drawn out of the FA Cup to play City again, they were just like, no, please. Now it's the fifth time they'll play them this season. So, yeah, I like... I do like Semenyo to score in this one. He's got two goals and two assists against Newcastle for both clubs he's played for in the Premier League. Scored in the League Cup semi-final against them as well. And I think that, you know, I think the signings in January, I know, you know, the couple, you know, the Semenyo signing and the Mark Gay signing just seem to have fitted into that team so well. So any tiredness that does appear, I think that will help alleviate that. And I also think we're starting to see the big players starting to play better. Obviously, Haaland had that little drought. You know, if he can start to score lots of goals, Rodri seems to be just coming back into it. I think Gay's just kind of solidified that defence a little bit. So I think City win here. It's just maybe -1 on the handicap, something like that. I think they could win by 2 clear with a tired Newcastle. Maybe look for it to be tight in the first half. City kind of get the job done 60 minutes on. So maybe if you're looking at, you know, draw first half, City to win the second half with Newcastle legs a bit tired and not being great on the road anyway. That's probably the way in, I think.
Semenyo 21-20 anytime scorer as well. Anything else, Lee, that we should be aware of this weekend?
Obviously, we've got the final one standing. We've had a break for the FA Cup. We've just about paid out €1.5 million now in winnings. There was a €100,000 single winner last weekend, the weekend before the FA Cup, and a couple of €20,000 pots went. So we go again 3 p.m. Saturday, new league, €20,000 league. Usual drill. It's last man standing, effectively. Play for free. Pick a Premier League team to win. If they win, you go through. If they don't, you can wait till the next week to get involved. And there's a few pots that could go this weekend as well. That's if those people have been waiting. There's like a couple of people in a 20k pot have been waiting for, what is it, like 10 days for this to come round, just waiting to see if they can win their money. But yeah, usual Acca boosts as well. All your Acca betting gets on the football over the weekend. The Bet Builder winning boost, Impact Sub, and the Epics, like I mentioned. So cracking weekend. Can't wait to get the Premier League back up and running again.
Lee, good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thank you, guys.
So Lee Phelps there, giving us some thoughts from his side of things. Where do you want to go next?
I have a feeling, by the way, just on Pep, I have a feeling like he's got, what, 3 Bundesligas, 3 La Ligas, 6 Premier Leagues. This could be a 7th. I feel like this is going to be the sweetest of all of those league
titles. Magnificent prime. 7.
Well, yeah, and because it's Mikel Arteta that he's up against, and because of also the 115 charges that are looming, we don't know when they're going to come out, and, you know, it's going to be within the next year, you would hope or imagine, but I just feel like there's a dog in him this season, Pep, and he wants this one so badly. That can sometimes blind you, and as it comes towards the tail end of the season, he can want it too much, but I think he would absolutely love this one.
He is scraping the head off himself.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, snapping himself. Yeah.
They kind of changed as well the last couple of weeks, the way they played. They were a bit more counter-attacking at the beginning of the season, and then I think it was after that, maybe that 5-4 game against Fulham, where they're kind of going back to the kind of the Pep style of Juega, the posición kind of thing, and they're a bit more solid maybe. And Haaland has kind of struggled with in terms of goal scoring from open play. So yeah, interesting to see how they kind of approached this last end of the season. I know they have obviously been off during the week in the Champions League, but yeah, I just can't write this Man City team off.
No.
Yeah. It's very difficult to know, isn't it? Like I think it's going to be a slow bicycle race to the end. Right. I don't think everybody's going to. There's a possibility that City could reel off the games, right? And if they do, fair play. But I don't think they're as capable of doing that. I think teams are less frightened of them than they used to be.
Yeah.
And Semenyo, I do feel like Semenyo is going to be like that Cantona, you know, signing that comes in and gets them over the line potentially. Like if you look back on the season at the end, his goals already have been crucial. He could score another 7 or 8 goals between now and the end of the season.
Yeah,
the form in January was abysmal.
Yeah,
like really, really bad, and it's slightly picked up. But are they a much different team from that? I'm not sure.
The City Arsenal game though on the 18th of April is going to be huge.
Yeah,
that could just be the deciding game of the entire kind of last end of the season.
And the fact they have to play each other in the EFL Cup final as well, like it's just psychologically for Arsenal. The City's the last team though that they want to see.
Yeah, all right, you're talking me into it. City to win.
Sunday we have Nottingham Forest, Liverpool.
Yeah, that's the other game, 2 o'clock. Phil Egan and Keith Tracy on that one.
Yeah,
it's a weird one. Liverpool just can't get that consistency.
They've sliding doors moment of the season.
Yeah,
where they're 1-0 up with 15 minutes left to go against City, and City's title race is over.
True. And then you play it like you play a Forest team that have Vitor Pereira coming in. Like, I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know. He could be brilliant. He could be shocking. It seemed a strange appointment to me. Wouldn't rule out them having another manager, fifth manager before the end the end of the season?
I don't know. I get a bit of the Tudor vibes off him. Like he's going to put a bit of a rocket up them too. Like anyone that's not going to buy into what he said in his press conference, anyone that's not going to buy into what he wants, they're not going to be even on the bench.
Yeah.
So the thing with Forest is they have lots of good players. Like they've signed a load of players. Obviously last year, and even in January, they were making bids for Lewis Duncan, different players all around the Premier League. So yeah, I think Dyche definitely needed to go, and Vito Pereira is a bit of a fix-it manager. So I was thinking maybe West Ham might catch them. Now with this new appointment, I think maybe Forest might be all right.
So you're still kind of thinking West Ham will be the ones to go down?
Yeah, I think so. I think I might go right down to the final day. But West Ham have really improved, and like they're playing like a 4-4-2, and the kind of like, you know, they're thrown out of the old West Ham way because that's just a nonsense. And yeah, like they've really improved this last kind of. It took a bit of time for Nuno to get it kind of up and running, but they've really improved over the last couple of weeks.
Thank Dr. Tottenham for that.
Yeah. West Ham could really regret that Šeško equaliser. Like, that was 3 points in the bag.
Yeah.
And they were the better team. Like, for the majority of that second half, the first half was brutal from both teams. But, yeah, they could really regret that 3 points becoming one. Yeah.
I think getting the resurgent Man United, getting a point against them, it's disappointing when, from their perspective, they'll have gone home that night, felt like they lost. But call light of day, you're like, okay, that's a surging team who's doing really well at the minute, who've beaten all the best teams in the country. We'll take a point against them.
So they all got haircuts the following day, the West Ham players. Did they? Yeah, social media, they were making a big deal of it all, getting their hair chopped.
Fair play to them.
Yeah.
So Everton play Man United on Monday night in the Lawyer Stadium.
Yeah, Hill Dickinson. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Goodison was one of those venues where you never liked playing under lights. I don't know if Hill Dickinson has built up that aura just yet, but Everton are one of those teams that, you know, this has to be a win for Manchester United. When you look at the teams around them for that fourth and fifth place Champions League, like Chelsea and Liverpool are kind of picking up results steadily, although not being that consistent. United are probably the most consistent of them over the last five or six games. But this is the type of game United have no excuses when you, as you say, have no other distractions, no European football, no FA Cup, no League Cup. And the players are absolutely fresh. I think the 2 weeks off, and they didn't bother going abroad for any sort of camp or anything. They just... maybe give the players a few days off and then stuck around Carrington for training. And
no blood spinning in the Middle East.
Exactly. So look, there are really no excuses for this Manchester United team in any game between now and the end of the season to not be really putting their best foot forward. I fancy United in this game. But
yeah, the thing is though, the last Manchester United Everton game was a Monday night in Old Trafford, and Everton have a man sent off after 10 minutes.
Shocking.
And lose that game 1-0. And that kind of summed up kind of Ruben Amorim's time, I think, at United. So... yeah, like United have to, like you said there, have no other things to even think about. Like those players are super fresh. I think United might play 40 games this year.
Yeah.
And when Arsenal are going to play like 70, like Manchester United should be targeting each weekend that they're at the best every single week.
So the double-edged sword here is that he has come in, picked his best 11, put them in their best places, and now it's very difficult to get in or out of the team. So we have a fair idea of what the starting team is going to be.
Yeah.
Is Maguire injured? Do we know?
No, we think he's back.
Yes. Is he?
Yeah. De Ligt is still out, obviously. And Dorgu and Mount.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, largely, as it would go at this stage of the season, you're doing quite well in terms of the injuries. But now everybody knows what he's going to do. So the analysts at Everton have had 4 games to look at and go, right, this is exactly how they're going to play. This is where they're going to play. This is how they're going to approach being in and out of possession. And these are the bits where the audition for the job isn't actually in the big games. It's these ones.
Yeah.
Can you get 3 points away from home against Everton? It should be slightly raucous. There'll be a bit of pressure on you. And if you can do this consistently between now and the end of the season, then you build a case for actually being capable of managing Manchester United.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, one-off victories against big teams, great, smash and grab. Everybody who has taken... the club over, with the exception of Moyes, has been able to do that since Ferguson. They all had big wins in some big games.
Yeah.
It's Jake O'Brien has been kind of sitting in that right back position, and he's going up against Mateus Cunha.
I think he's suspended, isn't he?
Jake O'Brien's suspended.
For the red card.
Yeah, card.
Forget I said that. The better for Ireland, by the way. Keep these lads fresh.
Yeah, well, hopefully Coleman gets a game.
True, yeah.
Not sure, he hasn't been in the squad the last few times.
Like Everton's form has been pretty it's been pretty steady. Like, they lost that game obviously to Bournemouth, and they were probably unlucky to lose that game as well. And Bournemouth improved this last couple of weeks as well under Iraola. But one player like that I would be wary of is Tariq George, that they signed from Chelsea. He's a good player,
yeah,
obviously to replace Grealish, who's out for the season. And Elamin Ajayi is definitely one of the best attackers in the league, and they've got Kieran Dewsbury-Hall back as well. James Garner is having a really, really good season. Yeah, there's still question marks over the striker Tierno Barry, but they have definitely weapons that can cause Man United problems.
The 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday afternoon. Aston Villa's first 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon kickoff in more than a year.
Is that right?
360 days. Villa against Leeds. Brentford riding high against Brighton. This is one of those games where if Brentford were to win this, then all of a sudden you are legitimately starting to think about European football. Some of their performances, Brentford have been like reaching. You know, we're playing up against a team we're not expected to do, and then we do. It's these games, I think, that are going to be like, have they got a scenario and a situation and an identity that can beat Brighton, who will obviously sit back and try and hit them on the counter? Brighton are absolutely muck at the moment.
Yeah.
And if they lose that game, suddenly, you know, they're stuck on only 31 points, which is only one above Leeds, and yet they weren't mentioned at all in this kind of relegation conversation we've been having.
Yeah, they're kind of being dragged in, aren't they?
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Paul Barber, the Brighton CEO's response to a fan.
No.
This was leaked during the week. It was brilliant, where a fan had, you know, written in and given out about the recent form for Brighton and the inconsistencies. And Paul Barber's response was leaked. He said, "Dear Oscar, thank you for offering your opinions. The club has spent 113 years of its 125-year history outside of the top flight. So after nine successive years playing at the highest level, you are worried about the club's future now. In the last four seasons, we finished 9th, 6th, 11th and 8th. And as things stand, with 12 games and 36 points to play for, we are 14th, 9 points off European place. We're playing in the toughest league in the world, and we've just lost to one of the world's best teams. Unfortunately, this level winning isn't guaranteed, and neither is progress in a straight line. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but some perspective is needed too." And I think he was dead right, Paul Barber. Like, sometimes these fans get spoiled. All of a sudden they see themselves as European contenders, top 10 sort of teams, and forget where they came from.
Man United fans says, "Know your place." little man, know your place.
Yes.
Yeah. Pat him on the arse. Three points, lads. Come on, just give us our 3 points.
Yeah. Well, United have
our traditional route.
Terrible record against Brighton over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Brighton have just won 2 of their last 15 games in all competitions. Winless in the last 6.
Hertzler's under the most pressure of anybody at the moment.
Must be the odds for next manager sacked, you'd imagine. I'm going to look that up right now. But Keith Andrews obviously going into the Macclesfield team, and nice little touch after the FA Cup game last week. But if they win that game, all of a sudden Brentford, like, if they're in 7th, obviously 40 points already, but if they were to break into the top 6 this season, they're going to have to be ahead of a Liverpool or a Chelsea, which would be just remarkable. Yeah. Considering the start of the season,
Solly March could be back for Brighton for the first time in over a year, I think, and he's played maybe 20 minutes of football in the last couple of years. He was a good player, like, under,
forgot about him.
Yeah, under different manager. I completely forgot that he's had terrible knee injuries, so he could be back in the squad for tomorrow. The interesting thing from the Irish perspective is Nathan Collins going to get back into the team.
Yeah. Did they say it was a knock?
I think he got a knock before the Villa game, and then he came on and he played in the middle of the back three. Then he didn't play the next game.
Yeah.
And he didn't play against Arsenal either. He didn't come on in that game. So it is slightly concerning from an Irish perspective. He's still going to play, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's whether you want players to be consistently playing to get in form, or, please God, let them wrap them in cotton wool, not let them get injured.
I don't know which is actually preferable at this stage. Just show up, isn't it?
Yeah.
They have bad form, doesn't matter. They're going to have that confidence.
I found myself researching the AZ Alkmaar scores every weekend just to make sure Troy Parrott wasn't taken off prematurely. I'm like nervously checking the scores.
Played 90 minutes last night against FC Noah from Armenia. Famously called Noah because of where the club is located near Mount Ararat,
which the Ark. Is
where the Ark crashed.
Here we go.
There you go.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
There you go.
History.
So Brentford, Brighton. Chelsea Burnley is also 3 o'clock on Saturday. Burnley ruined my final one standing. I was down to the last 600 in that one that Lee was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing really well, like 8 weeks in. And then fucking Burnley.
That was some result.
They came from 2-0 down.
Yeah. 3 goals in like 15 minutes.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
And they were knocked out of the cup by somebody crap.
Mansfield.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
West Ham 5:30 kickoff against Bournemouth, and that 8 o'clock kickoff we already spoke about is Man City and Newcastle. They are the Saturday fixtures, and then Sunday the two big games that we were bringing you live. Obviously, we've already spoken about Forest and Liverpool, and Spurs and Arsenal. It's 4:30. The other two games are Crystal Palace at home to Wolves, and Sunderland at home to Fulham. Anybody, anything else they want to talk about?
Nothing major out of those games on Sunday. Like, it's one of those funny weekends where you have three games at 2 o'clock on the Sunday, and then obviously the 8 o'clock game on a Saturday, which is quite a strange feeling.
Yeah, I think it's because Newcastle are flying all the way back from
a certain amount of hours.
Yeah, and that would have been the half 12 game usually, but player welfare has put that to 8 o'clock, which is
just on thing. The Chelsea Burnley, just to mention, Scott Parker obviously going back to his old
club,
ground at Stamford Bridge. Liam Rossignol is warming to me. I'm warming to him massively.
He's warming to you, yeah. He's like, yeah, I like that lad, Shane.
He listens to Off the Ball regularly.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But he's the more he talks, the more I like him. Like,
really?
he's cringe.
Oh, I can't.
I wouldn't be able to stand him at my own club, but to watch him from afar,
he's cringe in a very earnest way.
I'd say he's likable. I'd say if you've played under him, you'd really like him.
He's like the opposite of like a what Spurs have right now, which is the Igor Tudor.
Yeah. Yeah,
big. You know, this is a gentle arm around the shoulder manager.
He wants to be one of the lads.
Yeah, I see all that high five and stuff with Joe Pedro and Kukure. I'm a bit like, you're
the Cole Palmer post match interview and stuff.
Yeah,
he's very young. He's like for a comparative. You see,
I don't see Fabian Hurstler doing that, and he's the youngest manager in the league. So
you need that separation, don't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's actually for whatever reason the odds are down most places for next manager, but most recent ones were Hurstler's 5-4 favourite to be sacked. Scott Parker 7-4, Glasner 5-2, and then after that everybody's 25. So, who knows? Enjoy your weekend's football watching, folks. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next week.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball. GAA.
I always feel like the best players were able to grab a game by the scruff of the neck when an opportunity kind of presented itself. Great players and great teams were able to kind of seize that moment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.